Welcome to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast with Jessica and Kristen.
Welcome, everyone, to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast. I'm Kristen.
Hi, I'm Jessica.
And our guests today are Dave Buck and Jay Stone from Dying Scene. Hey, guys.
Good evening, ladies.
He called us ladies.
I know, that's nice. That's a compliment. So for those of you that don't know, Dave started Dying Scene. When did you start Dying Scene, Dave? I tried to trace it back. Uh-oh.
We can't hear Dave. You know what's funny? I was like, He didn't want to say hello to the fan. He didn't want to say hello to anybody.
He didn't want to give a shout out. It says something. Oh, Jess, don't you have to like join with audio? Yeah.
Does that work? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sometimes it just takes a unplug and a plug back in. Yes, I wasn't super rude. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Okay.
Yeah. So could you hear us?
Yeah, I could hear you guys.
Okay. Right on. So I was trying to trace it back. When did you start Dying Scene?
I think Dying Scene's been going for at least 6 years. Jay, keep me honest here. You are one of the longest running editors. So if you've been here more than 6 years, then maybe we've been here 7 years.
Yeah, I think you've been here 7 years because I joined 6 years ago this month. And so it had probably been maybe a year before I joined.
Okay. Wow. 7 years. That's crazy to me. Feels like yesterday. So 7 years ago.
Yeah. Right on. So 2010, you would have started.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Very
good. That holds up.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about why you decided to start Dying Scene and what the idea was there.
Sure. So sort of like a few factors that all sort of came together at the same time. I've always worked historically in the internet. And I started off a long time ago, like working at MySpace, and I did a lot of MySpace music things. And then from there, I went over to a company called Buzz Media. And they own and operated a lot of like celebrity gossip blogs, but also like music related blogs. They owned absolutepunk.net, something Friends of the Enemy or something like that, or Friends or Enemy, something that came out of Fall Out Boy. They eventually bought punknews.org. So that actually came from my suggestion and happened actually after I left. But at the time, my job was basically to help these blogs on our network grow their traffic and have better user experiences. And so it was while I was there that I think I just sort of got introduced to just blogging in general. And I'd always been a crazy punk nerd. You know, I was always one of those guys that like knew, what labels bands were on or what bands that people played in beforehand. And I always had this punk trivia that just stuck in my head, sort of like sports fanatics have with, you know, sports stats. So people had always told me like, you should have a blog. And, you know, I had no idea how to do that. So eventually it started becoming, started feeling like something I could probably pull off. And then also around this time, I had historically read punknews.org all the way through college. That was like my go-to place for finding new punk bands. But back then, like 7 or 8 years ago or 9 years ago even, I was starting to find that I was like discovering a lot more bands that I thought were really, really good on my own through sites like MySpace. And I had come across like 6 or 7 bands or albums that I thought were, or 6 or 7 bands who had put out albums that year that I thought were some of like the best punk releases of the year. And they were getting zero mention anywhere on the web. Certainly, you know, not on the sites I was reading, punknews.org or absolutepunk.net. And so I still hadn't really thought about creating a site, but I wanted to put together this compilation for a buddy of mine who was turning 30. And when we were in high school together, our dream was to move to California and start a punk record label. That's like what we were going to do with our lives.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Oregon.
Okay.
So cold in the land of, cold and rain. And I thought, I was wanting to move to like the land of palm trees, skateboards and punk rock. Mm-hmm. And so that sort of dream died a little bit and the label never came about, but we always thought we'd call it Dying Scene Records. Cause we thought, you know, like the skate punk scene that we love so much was dying and you know, that whole thing. So, as a joke sort of for this, my buddy's birthday, I was going to put together this compilation album and call it Dying Music for a Dying Scene. And then I was going to put all these like, you know, songs from these unsigned bands that I had found that had no label and no representation online or anything. And so I just spent like an entire weekend like creating the logo for Dying Scene Records. And it just became this like, it's like, then it like turned a weekend, turned into a week. And then I had this, like I packaged up this whole CD. I just got really into this whole thing. And then I wrote like the mission statement of Dying Scene Record. And then once I sent it out, I just sort of decided to just like carry on. And I just thought, you know what, if I was going to have a website, maybe I should turn it into like dyingscene.com and have this website. And I'll just sort of design like what the header would look like. And the same sort of mission statement, which I think you can still find it somewhere buried. That's like on my, I think on like the profile page of my Johnny X profile on dyingscene.com or like in the FAQ on our Facebook or something, but it's all about exposing new bands and blah, blah, blah. And so anyways, that mission statement just turned into the website. I designed it out and, I spent, like 3 months designing it. And then I just took my life savings and found a company to build it. And I don't know. The rest is history. That was probably a way longer explanation than you were looking for. You could edit that down to a 30-second snippet.
We don't edit because we're not professional. This is it. This is like
I was really hoping like, you guys would make me sound really witty and articulate at the end.
You did that yourself, but yeah. there's no editing. Like the fact that we're this far is pretty much it. Wow. I was just thinking during that explanation, I was thinking, wow, I really would think we need someone to work for Mabel Syndrome like this guy. And then I was like, wait a minute, maybe I can go work for him.
We're hiring, always hiring.
So Jay, how did you come on board?
So it was actually, I got introduced to the site through some old message board that I was reading. It was connected to the old face-to-face website. And somebody said, hey, there's this website called Dying Scene. You should check it out because they're actually really cool. And so I was reading it for a while. And back when MySpace was still a thing is usually where I sort of linked to all my Dying Scene information. And Dave put out a blast one day just saying he was looking for writers to get involved. And I had always regretted the fact that I didn't go into journalism, that I took sort of a different career path. And I'd always been sort of, like Dave said, I think we're sort of kindred spirits in that like early to mid 90s punk, skate punk dork sort of scene. And I thought it would be a really cool way to get more involved into the music scene, which I had always kicked myself for not doing before. And so it just sort of grew organically like that. We talked one night over the phone. And I started working a regular shift every Wednesday night for the last 6 years. And then it just sort of grew and grew and grew and grew from there.
Was that in your intention from the beginning, Dave? Was it, did you want to have contributors or were you just going to put out all of the information?
No, yeah, I knew from the beginning. So a lot of it was, I had to think through the operations. Right? I knew I wanted to have consistent coverage. I wanted to be publishing stories in real time every single day. And so it started off, you know, MySpace was still popular back when we started this thing. And so I would put, messages up on actually like the MySpace classified ads, like before the site launched, I had it built. It was in like a super secret development mode. Mm-hmm. And back then I actually, I only hired people who were in LA because it never even occurred to me like to train people over the phone and things. And so I would drive all over Los Angeles and meet people in like Starbucks and things and like train them and get them on board. And Jay does, I don't even know if Jay knows this, but we used to do like our Dying Scene. We used to have these Dying Scene conference calls. We stopped doing them a couple of years ago. It was too hard with 40 people or something, but, And we used to actually do those conference calls, our weekly meetings or whatever, in person in LA. Like we'd all meet, I'd have everybody come to like a Mexican restaurant and we'd, you know, sit and hang out and talk. I knew it was always going to be a team. And luckily at the time, or unluckily, however you want to look at it, I'd gotten laid off, right at the time I decided to like pay this company to build Dying Scenes. So I spent a year doing like consulting and I had like a lot of free time. So I spent probably 80% of my time on like Dying Scene, finding people, hiring them, building the team, and then sort of figuring out the operations of it. But I myself wrote a ton. I think I'm still the biggest contributor on the site, and probably wrote half the stories back then, but it dialed down significantly once I got a full-time job again.
Yeah. So I have a question. When all these people are kind of starting to say, I'll write for you or I'm interested or whatever, did you have any really bad meetings with people? Or meet people that do?
I had...
Totally tell us about Jay's horrible.
Oh, I love Jay. He said we're kindred spirits. I feel like we're like the more normal, we're like normal people. We're like the old dads on the team, I'm not a dad. But we're the same age and we have all these kids that work for us, but I haven't had any like horrible, like, actually, no, I did have one guy that turned out to be a total psychopath and like threatening and stuff. But then I had one actually bad meeting that was like, I just made a complete ass out of myself. Man, I don't know if I should actually even tell the story.
You can't take us that far and then not follow through. Can you edit slightly?
Screw it.
Four listeners. It's really not.
Yeah, like literally, you know who's going to listen to this? Jay and my mom. So we're good.
So, all right. So I said I would hire people through MySpace and I meet them in person. And so, I put a class, somebody responded to a classified ad and it was, their name was Turtle. And,
I don't know this story, by the way.
Oh,
sure. Turtle.
I'm already regretting telling you. Back and bite me. Yeah. Somehow this, and I'm reading, looking at, usually I would look at their profile on MySpace, try to figure out like, what they're all about, sort of, get a sense for them. And I did that. And then I scheduled a phone call. I talked to this person on the phone and we talked for a while. This person's voice was kind of nasally, really, sort of unclear if it's male or female, to be perfectly honest. And the pictures were very ambiguous as well. And, but the profile said male, And so I thought, well, this person looks kind of female, but I guess this person's a male. And I combed through the comments, to be honest, I combed through the comments forever, trying to find some like verification. And it's, at some point somebody was like, hey dude, I'll see you at the thing. So it's like, okay. That like solidified this is a male. And then when we talked on the phone, I think we were talking about some artist like Jeffree Star, if you remember who that was from MySpace or something. And so this person knew that person. I think I was like, oh, that's cool. How do you know? And he said, oh, well, I'm gay. And so through the gay community, I don't know, we've met and hung out or whatever. So, fast forward, we're now a week later, we meet in person in Hermosa Beach and here I meet this person and it's, very short cropped hair, shorter than my hair now, glasses, very, very androgynous sort of human, but I am just 100% convinced that this person's a male. I'm just like, I'm dead set. I've solidified it in my mind. So anyways, I trained this person for an hour. Sitting there for an hour, going over all the stuff, sitting right next to each other, and then said something about their girlfriend's. Like, oh, my girlfriend said something, and I said, oh, your girlfriend. And I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. For some reason, I thought you said you were gay, and this was, I am. And then I just keep going, and I'm like, oh, so like your ex like girlfriend like before or something, and then it just like record scratches and she basically just turns to me and look at me and just says, do you think I'm a dude? And then I was just like frozen. I didn't know what to say. I was like, oh, of course not. It was horrific. Like,
absolutely. It's amazing. It's not horrific. It's the best. Yeah. I love it. So, that's a great story. You should tell it more.
Yeah. Well, so wait, did you hire Turtle? Like,
Turtle. Yeah, luckily wasn't super offended, and I backpedaled. I said, "Look, I thought you were female. I just like your MySpace profile says male, and there's a dude on there somewhere, and I didn't want to make any weird assumptions." And she said, "Yeah, my girlfriend was fucking with me, so she changed the gender or something." I was like, "Well, that's not a very funny joke." But yeah, Turtle wrote for us for, I don't know, probably 6 months or a year or something. And I hope she's doing well now. And I hope she does not hear this podcast.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's a good story. So, Kristen, were you on MySpace? Kristen,
no, I didn't really know that.
You weren't on MySpace?
Not really, no.
Oh, I loved it.
I don't know.
I loved it. I was, but that's because the original face-to-face message board kind of crossed over with MySpace a little bit in terms, because face-to-face was there and all of the members of the message board were on MySpace, so we could communicate outside of the message board on MySpace. So that's the main reason I was on there, was solely like the face-to-face connection. But I don't remember my password and stuff. I would do anything to get back onto my MySpace page.
It wouldn't matter. It doesn't look the same. It's like dead. It's destroyed. Site is like gone.
But I've gone to it. It's, yeah. I just like, I want to know how it got left. Like, what's the last thing that I left MySpace with?
What was your profile pic?
I'm probably wearing a face-to-face shirt, and I was like 2020, so it was probably an awesome picture. Jay, you're drinking ginger ale.
We forgot to start with, what are you drinking?
What are you drinking, Dave?
Oh, I'm just drinking water now.
Oh, God. Oh.
Yeah, I know. I had a beer at work, but then I switched to
water. Oh, a beer at work.
See, we do need to work for you. Kristen, are you drinking? You're drinking wine.
I know. I don't usually drink wine, but I am tonight. Just something different.
Special occasion.
Yeah. Something like that. What are you drinking, Jess? Are you drinking a Caesar?
I am.
Tell these guys what a Caesar is.
Well, Jay knows because...
No, this is horrific.
I feel like every podcast we do is going to have at some point me explaining this, but
it'll be you explaining something Caesar, Canadian.
But Dave, you grew up in Oregon. So yeah. you're close to Canada.
No, I grew up in Seattle. I'm even closer and I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
It's so weird. So it's vodka, Clamato juice, Liam Perrins, Tabasco, lemon or lime, and then variations of garnish. And Clamato juice is tomato juice and clam juice that is mixed together.
That sounds like a frat house. Like they make the pledges drink that.
That's exactly right.
Totally. But like, I could give this to anybody and nobody would be like, fuck, way too much clam juice. Like, it's not like the residing or the most prominent feature of it.
So honestly, why have the clam juice in it? It just gives it a little.
Because tomato juice is like, I don't know. It's like, would you mix vodka and V8? No.
No.
That's no for all of you that hesitated. Maybe. So this is sort of like, it's the equivalent to a Bloody Mary. So like when I go to the US and nobody knows what a Caesar is, I almost always order Bloody Marys. And Bloody Marys are like, in the States, they're amazing. You guys have like crazy concoctions and mixtures. But if you order a Bloody Mary in Canada, do you know what you get? You get tomato juice, vodka, and Tabasco.
Oh.
Like Bloody Marys in Canada aren't a thing, but this is kind of like our version. We just like to add shellfish.
I think you're talking to three non Bloody Mary drinkers.
Yeah. No, I got nothing.
How do you guys Okay, so on deck when I'm finished, I've got Golden Drac.
Oh, that's a what cool that? Bottle.
Which is it's from, is it Belgium? I don't have my glasses on because they reflect in the screen. Oh. But let's say, yeah, Belgium. But it's 10.5%, which is why I buy it.
Wow. Ooh. And it's a beer?
Yeah.
Oh.
And makes, so that...
This makes my ginger ale seem incredibly lame.
Your ginger ale and water are
it's
lame.
It's better than water.
Seriously. Yeah.
You are one step up from water, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It might be a side step.
So, Dave, I have a question for you. When you say you have staff on Dying Scene, I thought, do you actually pay people to write and contribute?
No.
Right. No. I didn't think so.
Volunteer staff.
You have 40 people working for you that don't get paid.
Yeah. I mean, it's always changing, right? There's just work.
Yeah.
Constantly losing people and constantly adding people. I actually need to do a massive round of hiring right now. We're probably at our lowest editorial staff right now. Normally we'll have, I try to have four shifters 5 days a week. So there's ideally there would be 20 news writers, and then there's probably another just 20 album reviewers, show photographers, interviewers / content creators. So most of those people, most of the 20, at least half of them are like very sporadic contributors. Some of them like once every couple months, others once or twice a week. And then others are actually like dedicate like full, at least 3 hours every week. Mm-hmm. Those are the base of the site. And then you have sort of like the captains, the senior like editors like Jay, who really just like help keep the site going. So without Jay, Dying Scene would not be what it is. We have another sort of captain, Ricky, who sort of handles our reviews and stuff, though he's much less involved actually than he used to be, but he sort of wrangles those guys. Jay wrangles all our interviewers and show reviewers. And who am I forgetting, Jay? That's sort of actually just sort of down to
us. Kind of it. Yeah, really.
We've lost some of our other captains to things like day jobs,
paying jobs.
Yeah, and
it's
wives
so,
and things.
So basically, you're saying like you have this hugely successful operation, and it's all run completely on passion and love for music then.
That's right. Yep.
Gee, that's amazing. Because yeah. Chris and I are passionate, unqualified, have 4 followers. And it's exactly like what you've described, both of you guys so far, is exactly like what me and what Chris and I talk about and what we, it's like we feel it, but it's just like getting it out there. And what you guys are doing, like that's, I had no idea that it wasn't paid. Like to have that kind of operation, and it's just people who are doing it because they love it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, Dying Scene, I don't make any money. Well, I mean, it does make revenue, has advertising revenue, but we're talking like hundreds of dollars a month. And, and that just goes back into covering our server costs, and there's just like random things that come up. Like, I don't know, punk rock bowling we sponsor every year. So paying for our punk rock bowling thing, our t-shirts or whatever it is. So all that money usually just goes right back into it, or Dying Scene Records related things. So it's just a fun sort of creative outlet. I think if I didn't have it, I would just lose my mind with my regular day job. And so it's just, yeah, it's something just like you said, we're all really, really passionate about this thing. I think we're all so nerdy about this passion that we have. It's like we need this like nerdy outlet. And I think we're so fortunate to have built this audience over the years of people that I think share this passion. Not only like built this great team too, that all we all share this passion together, but like it feels like this big family when we write these stories. And knowing that we're just getting this out to hundreds of thousands of people that sort of share that passion, and seeing it like on Facebook, like getting to communicate with these people. So, you know, if people Facebook message us on the Dying Scene Facebook, like we'll write back. It's, you know, we talk to the fans and, or the readers and, you know, they don't always like us too. We get a lot of shit talkers about covering bands like Blink 182. How dare we? You know, so, but yeah.
And do you care about those? Like, how does that, like, did that affect you before? Does it affect you now?
We have like an FAQ, on the site. And one of the answers to the FAQ is, you know, you claim to be supporting a Dying Scene. Then why do you cover bands like Green Day and Blink 182? The answer to that is really, you know, not everybody grew up with like an older brother or, you know, or a older high school friend who like introduced them to punk rock, you know, like that's how I got into punk actually. It was like a friend's older brother had these like face-to-face CDs and propaganda CDs that I would borrow. A lot of people get into it because they heard like a Rancid song on the radio or a Blink 182 song on the radio. And they don't know those are punk bands. They just know they like the music and, you know, and so maybe one day they're on Google or on Facebook and they see this story about Blink 182 or Rise Against, and they click through and end up on this site called Dying Scene. And while they're on there, they see, you know, they read five or six other stories about five or six other bands that they've never heard of before, but they listen to those bands and fall in love with them and then sort of discover like, holy shit, these things all have one thing in common, and it's the fact that they're in this genre called punk rock. Actually, even diving deeper into that older brother, that high school friend who introduced me to a lot of music. Before that, actually, I got introduced to punk rock. I saw a Rancid video for Salvation on MTV, and I had no idea it was called punk rock. I just knew I liked it. For whatever reason, I bought the album. I loved it. Then I saw a music video for 21st Century Digital Boy by Bad Religion on some like 3 a.m. weird, not MTV, sort of like college broadcast show or something. No idea it was punk rock, bought it. Same thing with Offspring, Come Out and Play, you know, and I bought that again, not knowing any of these bands were punk, and weirdly, they're all Epitaph bands, and this was like 1993 or something. And so one day I'm at the record store and I see this album, you know, Punk-O-Rama, and I just notice that it's got unreleased, you know, music from Rancid and Offspring and Bad Religion. I'm like, holy shit, I like all three of those bands. I'm going to listen to this thing. And I loved every single song on that album. And I had no idea what this punk rock thing was, but then it introduced me to NoFX and Pennywise and 10-Foot Pole and RKL. And I think I just systematically went through and I bought every single one of those albums, and it like expanded from there, because back then we didn't have the internet. We didn't have blogs and like places to go listen to this music easily. So I look at Dying Scene as like the digital representation of that record store. And we do a story about Blink 182 and we pull you into the store. And while you're there, you happen to pick up or read a few more stories, listen to a couple more songs from bands you never knew. And we just turned you into a punk band. That's like a huge success for us. So
that was like the best explanation ever, mm-hmm. of like, and combined with the fact that everything you just mentioned, I was like looking at all of our screens and Jay and Kristen and I are all like nodding our heads going, yes, yes. That's like the, it's so true, right? Like mm-hmm. when you said Green Day is one of the first bands that like I was obsessed with when I was younger. And I don't know how old you guys were, but like I was in grade 7 when Dookie came out. And
you're younger than the rest of us.
I am. Mm-hmm. But it came out and I was at like I was at a Christian summer camp trying to be brainwashed. Mm-hmm. And one of the girls there was like, hey, have you ever heard this before? And she played it for me. And I was like, oh my God. So I go home and I like record. We don't have MTV. We have a Canadian equivalent, and I recorded like the countdown on Friday, and I like obsessively watched like Green Day videos, which also led me to Kerplunk and like their earlier stuff, which then led me to boys who really like punk music who then made me mixtapes, right? Like that. And then I was like, holy fuck, what's like Face to Face Propaganda, like amazing. It's that's just such a great way of explaining it, how one thing leads to researching the rest of the genre, right? Like that was a great explanation. That was awesome. That made me happy. I like that. That was good.
I had a lot of time to think about that one. Rewrote that explanation probably 20 times before we got up on the website.
Jay, how did you get into it? Punk, I mean, like what was your...
Almost exactly the same way, although, and I get crap for this all the time, but really the band that got me into punk rock was Pearl Jam, which is by no means a traditional punk band, but they were the first band that I sort of fell in love with that was sort of my own. And wasn't something that my dad listened to or my mom listened to or my uncles listened to, but they were the first sort of rock band that was my thing. And so learning about their influences, learning about like Eddie's history in the punk scene and the other bands that they had played in before, that led me to Bad Religion, both because Eddie had been a fan of theirs and had talked in some, I don't know, magazine that I got at the grocery store one day about going to see Bad Religion in like 1982. And then he played on a track, sang on a track on Recipe for Hate. So because Eddie Vedder was involved with it, I had to go out and buy it. So that was like the first punk album that I bought. And then the rest of it sort of totally made sense. And I just sort of followed from there because of Epitaph Records being what it was and knowing that Bad Religion was on Epitaph. Then I just sort of went back through the Epitaph catalog, which led me to the Fat catalog. And then the rest is probably history. And it's not really a thing I think that happens as much nowadays. Like you used to be able to just go to the record store and turn a record around. And if you saw the label and you kind of knew what the label was, then you would buy it because, oh, well, they put out Bad Religion or they put out Rancid or they put out Green Day, or that doesn't really happen anymore. And so I've heard Dave and other people talk in the past about sort of wanting to do that sort of a thing. So that, like, to fast forward and Dave had started Dying Scene Records and putting out bands that way, I look at this sort of as an extension of what we used to be able to do in the record store back 20, 25 years ago, where people can go to Dying Scene Records, and if they like an album that we put out, we'll look at the rest of them, and they're all going to be sort of related. So to me, that's sort of like the biggest thing that we do to carry that particular part of the torch forward.
I love that. See, and my automatic reaction is I didn't have record stores when I grew up not because I'm younger, Kristen, but because I grew up in the middle of nowhere where we had zero music scene, we had zero live shows, we had no record stores, we had nothing. It was like everything was mail order or a 9-hour road trip to see a band, which wasn't always allowed. So
where in Canada did you grow up?
Well, I grew up on the very far north end of Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know where Victoria is,
mm-hmm.
I grew up on the complete opposite end of Vancouver of Victoria. So back then, before the new highway was built, it was like a 9-hour trip to get to Victoria.
Wow.
So the close, like there was no fast food where I grew up. No, like the closest McDonald's I think was like 4 hours away.
Man, wow. No McDonald's and no, what were like Sam Goody? What was like the
Tim Horton
store? What was it?
The what? The record? Like the...
Yeah, like the CD chain stores, like in every mall.
So we had Ambi Sound and we had Sam the Record Man. Oh. And yeah. So everything was mail order. And like the punk scene in my high school consisted of like maybe 10 of us at the mm-hmm. most. And we were like weird, right? Because nobody knew what that was, because it was just us, right? But so like the thought of being a teenager and going to a record store to look through a catalog of music was just never an option for me. It was solely based on sending in your mail order, getting a CD, and then people passing around the mixtapes kind of thing. Hmm. Yeah. So right. now we have places like Dying Scene to go to.
Amen.
Yeah. I'm curious, both of you, Jay and Dave, what your favorite interview has been that you've done.
Mm.
And Jay is going to be way better qualified to answer this question. I think literally in the entire time I've had Dying Scene, I've only done one interview.
Oh, wow.
yeah.
But it was a really good one, by the way.
So that one was just with Fletcher from Pennywise, and it really only came about by complete accident. I lived in Hermosa Beach at the time, and he's from Hermosa Beach, and I was in a restaurant, a brand new restaurant just opened up in Hermosa Beach, and so this guy, he ended up walking in. He's hard to miss. He's gigantic. And so I was with my girlfriend at the time, and I'm like elbowing her. I'm like, "Holy shit, that's Fletcher from Pennywise." She's like, "Who?" And so I explain the whole thing, and then you know she's like, "Well, you should send him a drink, and send him a drink, and you know have the waiter like say it's from you know the founder of Dying Scene." I'm like, "No fucking way! Like that is, this isn't a movie, and I'm not sending it. Only people in movies do that kind of shit. There's no way." And then she like gets the waiter involved, and then both of them really like hype me up, like, "No, it'll be awesome! Like, of course you should totally do it. Send him over a drink. We'll say it's from me." I'm like so nervous about this. This is so not something I would do. I don't even do interviews. I don't like going up and introducing myself. To these band members and things, but finally I'm like, "All right, fine, yeah, send me whatever he's drinking. I guess just buy him a drink and then say it's from the founder of Dying Scene." And I'm like humiliated, I'm like so nervous. I'm like looking, I refuse to even watch, and then I'm just eating, and then the waiter comes back and he's like, "Okay, I did it. He's so appreciative." And I'm like, "Oh shit, really?" And he's like, yeah, look, he's cheersing you now. And so like, "Oh, okay." And I like grab my drink and I look across the restaurant. And I'm looking, at Fletcher, and he's just sitting there with his back to me. He's on the other side of the restaurant. But, and I'm kind of holding it. And then my focus shifts like 30 feet towards me. And there's this other table of a bunch of guys, and they're like all turned around looking and raising their drinks, I don't even know that. I just raised my drink to them, and they don't know what to do. It's all awkward, and they're like, "This is some random guy. I just bought this other random guy who's about to dinner with his bros a drink." And so I just hear it to them and sit back down, and I call the waiter over, and I'm like, "You idiot!" I was like, "That's not him." And so...
That's better than the turtle story.
So anyways, it worked out. He's like, "I'll get it this time, I'll get it right." And then I'm like, "No, forget it." He's like, "No, I got this." And then he runs over and gets the right guy, and then ends up coming back later and saying something like he's really appreciative, he wants to come over and say hi to him and stuff. So we went over and talked to him. He's really, really friendly guy. And it just so happened that was around the time that Jim Lindbergh had left Pennywise, and they were recording their new album with Zoli from Ignite, and it was like all exciting, and I think Fletcher was like really gung-ho on like promoting that, and I think he still had like a lot of weird beef with Jim at the time that he like really wanted to sort of like tell. And so he invited me over to his house, and then like a few days later I'm sitting in his living room, and we like hang out for 2 hours, and I do this like really long interview and all about like all the shit that him and Jim and the drama with the band. It was like, it was really interesting, and it took forever to transcribe. And so that's why I never do interviews anymore. Just between running the operations of Dying Scene and then balancing that with my day job. It's just, I just don't have time. I can't possibly get to anything else. Even though I'd love to do a lot more interviews. Like Jay, I just let Jay slay all the white whales. for me now, I'll just tell you this: my favorite interview of Jay's is what he did with Fat Mike, which was like the one person I always wanted to be able to interview on Dying Scene. Just having even Fat Mike even acknowledge that he even knows what Dying Scene is like was such a milestone for me. I was like, I was more excited than Jade that interviewed. So I won't answer for him. I'll just I don't know if that was Jay's favorite interview, but I'd be curious to hear actually what
that's my favorite interview of Jay's as well.
That's a really hard question to answer, honestly, because I think I'm up around 5 or 6 dozen interviews that I've done at this point. And I really, really like a lot of the ones that I've done either in person or over the phone. I mean, email interviews, I'm not really counting for purposes here, but there have been a few memorable ones. I think Fat Mike was obviously one of the most memorable ones, in part because it was set up, and I don't get nervous doing these things anymore, but I was legitimately a little bit nervous about that one because that was certainly the biggest interview to date and probably the biggest one we'll ever have for Dying Scene. And so I finally, like, I went to work so I could do it there so I could be just away from everything and focus, and it was on a Sunday. And I called him at the agreed upon time, and I woke him up. and he said, "Oh, I thought we were doing Pacific time, not Eastern time." I said, "Oh, the email I have says Eastern time." And I thought, "Oh, good, here we go. I just pissed off Fat Mike." And he said, "Well, I'm going to dinner, going to breakfast with the family. Can I call you back in like an hour?" I said, "Yeah, fine, whatever." So I killed a little time. And then that sort of took the nerves of the interview away. And then when I called him back an hour later, he answered the phone with probably the longest duration belch that I had heard in a while, rather than saying hi. And then he just said, "All right, let's fucking do this." And then so like all my nerves went away, and that became a really cool thing. I've done a lot of interviews with people that I think were really good at getting people to open up and talk about things that they didn't necessarily want to talk about or hadn't planned on talking about. The interview that I recently did with Stacey from Bad Cop, Bad Cop is one of my favorites because she talked about a lot of stuff that she had never really talked about to anybody before. So I really enjoyed that one. There was a record release show that FM 359, which was sort of a one-off project featuring Mike and Johnny from the band Street Dogs, and Rick Barton from the band Continental, but he used to be in Dropkick Murphys with Mike. And it was this sort of folk Americana thing, but they did a record release show. They've only played 2 shows. One of them was at a bar here in Boston called McGreevy's, which is owned by the current Dropkick Murphys. So there was this weird sort of history there. And Rick doesn't necessarily get along with the Dropkick Murphys guys historically. And so we were just sitting in the basement of McGreevy's. And if you've never been there, up against one of the walls, there's a row of chairs that are taken from Fenway Park. So the three guys from FM 359 and me sitting in old Fenway Park chairs. And Rick is very, he doesn't pull any punches, and he doesn't necessarily think through what he's going to say most of the time. And he spent probably a good 5 minutes just railing on the Dropkick Murphys and sort of what it became and like their whole connection with the Red Sox and how overdone the whole thing is and how like overly marketed it is and how sort of sickening it is. And then he just kind of stopped himself at the end of this 5 minute rant, like he had tired himself out, and he kind of just looked around and went, "Well, I think I lost my mind there for a minute." And just like little moments, like in part because he was like looking at a mural on the wall that was like the current lineup of the Dropkick Murphys and like all of the Red Sox World Series trophies. And there's obviously this thing in him where I think that the story goes that he sold his like publishing credits or whatever for early Dropkick stuff for like $400 when he left the band. He got nothing from them and was like living in a camper with a dog for a long time. Like he's had a really, really weird history since leaving the Dropkicks. And I love the guy, but it was sort of this really weird confluence of events, and just watching the look on Rick's face when he kind of realized where he was and that he had just spent 5 minutes railing on the band that really made him what he was, and then sitting basically in the palace that they built. That was one of the more memorable ones to do in person. I could probably remember all of them off the top of my head, and I have like fun little things or interesting things that I took from all of them, but those are two of the more three of the more memorable ones that I've done, but I really like all of them for a lot of different reasons.
Hey, Chris, well, first, Jay, my favorite is the Stacey D one. I love that one. That one was really awesome. Kristen, who is your favorite in-person interview?
Oh,
sarcasm.
No, I don't want to talk about that one.
Well,
that means we should definitely hear about it.
No, it's really.
There was, let's just say there was different time zone counseling going on back and forth. It's hard because we're not together, right? Like,
Jay was at that one with me too.
Jay was there.
Yeah. And I'll tell you later, Dave, but.
We do this thing away from each other, right? Which is why the podcast and the video thing is kind of an interesting way for us to start getting into, because it's a way of us doing something together instead of separate. Like, I go to a show by myself and do an interview. She goes to a show and does one by herself. But Kristen flew to Vancouver and we went to the Millen Collin show and had the Millen Collin interview,
that was
which
definitely the best one by far.
It was the best one. it was one of the only ones. Because of our location though, we do stuff by email, Nicola just thought we were wanting to film a porno. So what better way to start an interview than being like, hey, come up to our hotel room. There's no other space available. And when you walk in, there's a video camera on a tripod on the bed.
No.
And lots of beer, lots of booze.
Yeah, literally. We met him in the lobby.
We had like a suite with a bar stools. Awesome.
We met him in the lobby and he comes into the elevator and he says, so is there like a conference room we can go to? And we said, no. No, there isn't. We're going to our hotel room. And Kristen says, don't worry, it'll be okay. And so we ride up the elevator in silence, and he comes into our suite, and on our bar is a lot of beer, and there's a video camera on the bed on a tripod. And he looked very uncomfortable. He looked very uncomfortable. And we had to like break him into it. And he spent 3 hours not making a porno with us. And it was amazing. It was so good. But he was so uncomfortable.
That's pretty awesome. I love that band.
Yeah.
Oh, they're awesome.
It was a pretty cool experience because we are so new at this compared to you guys, but like a band that we've been listening to for so long, and next thing you know, we're getting drunk filming an interview in a hotel room with, you know, like, holy shit, this is like, okay, so what's the first time that happened to you, Jay? Like the holy shit, this is happening. like starstruck type thing. Like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm in a hotel room not filming a porno with this person.
Yeah, I've never not filmed a porno with somebody in a hotel room. So I don't really know, but I think meeting, God, I don't remember the first time, to be honest. But I do think that there are a small handful of people that when I have met them, or every time that I've met them, or if we get to we're at the level now where we text each other, like I still do get that feeling that, wow, this is really cool. That like Chuck Reagan has been a big influence on mine forever, both through Hot Water Music and through his own solo stuff. And just like interviewing Chuck the first couple of times, or getting to hang out with him a couple of times, has been really neat. Dave Hawes from The Loved Ones I've been a big fan of forever. And to have him say of me that he considers us like peers, and that my voice was in his head when it came to like writing the new album. He told me this the other day. That sort of gave me goosebumps a little bit, because I don't look at myself that way, obviously, and I think it's weird if people do. But there's been a lot of those sort of moments. And honestly, the most recent one was probably the first time that Dave and I met up. I went down to Brooklyn to see Lucero back in November. and just this sort of surreal moment of Ben Nichols, who I've been a fan of from Lucera forever, and just standing outside the place and then walking down the street and drinking whiskey with me and Dave and Ben from Lucero, and then a couple of other hangers-on and stuff, obviously. But it was this really weird and really cool, surreal moment. And I definitely remember looking sort of over my right shoulder at one point, and it was just me, and then Dave, and then Ben from Lucero. And I'm like, how did this happen? Like, how is this my life now? That was probably the most recent. That was a really weighty moment for me. That I thought that, like, this is my scene now. Like, this is a really cool thing.
That's how it is with face to face for me now. Like, when they were in Vancouver and we like go out for oysters and beer before the show and, you know, that sort of thing. And there was a moment where I was sitting there at the table and like looking around going like, holy shit, how did it go from laying on my bed as a teenager in the basement with the music blasting to like, hey, let's finagle the oyster chef into giving us a deal on the oysters with face to face kind of thing. Like,
yeah, it's weird. I don't even include them, and I don't know why, and maybe I should. But they're like the one band that I've known personally forever in this whole scene. And for whatever reason, I because I've known them so long that I sort of lose sight of the fact that it's pretty cool that I've known them forever. But yeah. I think I'm up to 18 or 19 face-to-face shows, and I've been friendly, like good friends with Scott for, I don't know, 15 years now. So I sort of gloss over that whole thing that I guess if I were to step back, like the fact that I text like the best, well, I maybe Matt Freeman from Rancid aside, like the best punk rock bass player out there, probably in the history of American punk music. And like, we text each other a few times a week. Like, I sort of forgot that was actually a really cool thing that I should probably be more appreciative of.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and say, best punk rock bassist, just so you know.
I don't know. Matt Freeman's pretty good. And I love you, Scott, if you ever watch this, but Matt Freeman's pretty good.
Scott's the kind of guy that can give credit where credit's due, though. He's not the kind of guy that will deny someone else's talent. Scott's one of the smartest people I've probably ever chatted with.
And he's a guitar player too, who just happens to play bass for Face to Face, but he's a guitar player.
Yeah. Yeah. True. What time is it? How long have we been going? Has it been an hour?
Almost.
We're right about.
Yeah. Good. My mom's already going to have tuned out, so.
Now let's get to the good stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what happened when we were doing this with the Bomb Pops the other night. And the girl from the girls, and they were sitting in Polly's bathroom?
Yeah.
Just like, and we were having this great conversation. And when we kind of wrapped it up and said, okay, we'll see you guys later. Thanks for doing this. They were like, hey, wait, do we have to stop? We're just getting started. And it's true. Sometimes, I don't know. I feel like the longer we go, the more delirious I get and then the stupider I sound. So
it's the Caesar juice kicking in.
It's the clams.
It's the clam juice.
It's the clams. Mm-hmm. FYI, you always have to make sure that it's in its like before its best before date.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Really selling us on this drink.
Just so you know, if you open the lid of your Clamato and it makes like a hissing sound, don't drink it.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, we've also almost made it through an entire video podcast with minimal technical difficulties.
Has there been any before we started, but have we been freezing or have I?
Tiny, tiny bit.
Have I?
Not really. Not like at the Bomb Pops. No, not too bad.
I'm in Canada. It's basically North Korea in terms of location. So
basically Alaska. Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for this. This was awesome.
It was fun.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
That's good. We're going to harass you to do part two eventually.
Yeah. Sure.
Can't wait.
We'll have six listeners by then.
Awesome. Yeah. Double the audience. It's amazing.
Well, double would be eight. So I don't know. That's
okay.
That's a little much.
But yeah. Yeah. Work out.
Awesome.
It.
Cool. Also, thanks,
everyone,
guys.
Check out dyingscene.com.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Right on. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies.
Bye.